was not listed in the prospectus. I removed my phone from my bag and dialed the number for the college. York Lifelong Learning Centre, how can I help you? It wasn't the same person this time, it was a younger woman. Hi, I'm really sorry, but I have an essay due in tomorrow and I've forgotten the name of my tutor. It's for art history on Tuesdays and Thursdays. Oh, that'll be David Brown. I could have sworn he was called Jake something. I must be going crazy unless David is new. No, she said. He's been working here for 8 years now. Same evenings too. But there's a Jack Hawthorne who teaches business studies. Maybe you're thinking of him? It must be. Thanks so much for your help. No problem. I hung up with my heart pounding against my ribs. I dabbed at the sweat on my forehead and leaned back against the car seat. How was this possible? When I'd first rung the college, I hadn't truly believed it was possible Jake had lied to me about working those evenings. Why would I think that? It had just been to make sure. I'd ordered the prospectus just to double-check. If I'd believed Jake was lying, I would have called back, but I didn't. I didn't call back. Instead, I'd forgotten all about it. In a fit of rage, I punched the steering wheel and let out a slow, deep growl of frustration. How could he lie to me? And why? Aiden let out a tiny whimper and I quickly twisted my body in order to face him. Aiden, it's all right, I soothed. I'm sorry. Mummy's really sorry about that. I deflated forwards and placed my head on the steering wheel. I've got some news that shocked me. I didn't mean to frighten you. I noticed that Aiden's hands had balled up, so I gently unclenched them by working his stiff fingers out with my own. Then I stroked his hair and let out a long sigh. Everything is going to be all right. I promise. As I put my key in the ignition, I wondered whether that was a promise I could keep. I went back to the house because I needed answers. Jake had been lying to me for years. He'd been lying since the very first day I met him. He'd always had that job. This wasn't something that had happened a few months ago. It was right from the very start. Every Tuesday and Thursday he worked at the college. Aiden was happy enough to potter in the garage to work on his painting while I paced the kitchen, switching from biting my thumbnail to scratching the rash on my hands. The rash had spread out from my thumb across the back of my hand and down my wrist, and it was on both hands now. I raked my fingers through my hair and tried to calm the heat of anger as it spread over my body. Without the television or the radio playing, the house stood silent, with only the sound of my own movements filtering through the rooms. The loaf of bread was still on the kitchen side where I'd left it. The butter was next to it. I put it away instinctively without really thinking about what I was doing. My mind was too busy trying to process the knowledge that my husband had lied to me. My scratching spread from my hands to my neck and then my forearms. Every part of me itched when I thought about the lies. I stroked my pregnant belly, trying to soothe the gurgling in my stomach. I felt sick. Suddenly, I burst to life. This was crazy. I couldn't stay in this house. Moving as fast as I could, I hurried up the stairs and began packing. What the hell was I going to do? My husband was a liar, and I was about to have his baby. I stopped and stared at the clothes in the suitcase. I'd made no plans for this situation. The only thing I could do was to go to Josie's house with Aiden and then think about what to do with Jake. Perhaps he could move out and I could take a little time to figure out where to go next. I knew Josie would tell me that there was no way I should move out of the house after he'd lied to me, but it wasn't my house to begin with, and honestly, I didn't particularly like it. It was his house. The door opened and I froze. Jake was back. I slammed the suitcase shut and stared at my trembling hands. At this point, I knew there was no innocent explanation for him lying to me. Either he had been having an affair this whole time, or he'd been hiding a second life from me. The one thing I didn't know was whether that second life included kidnapping and abusing my own child. I ran my hands over my hair and tried to remain calm as Jake shouted hello upstairs. I'd been so sure that Jake was innocent when the police took him in for questioning. They'd found nothing. He'd had a decent alibi. The police had questioned several men, so I'd thought nothing of it, except that I was certain I knew my husband that he wasn't capable of hurting a child like that. I was certain. But now, this lie, it was different. It changed everything and threw my entire home life into question. I didn't know what to believe. All I knew was that my son was downstairs with a man I could no longer trust. I gritted my teeth, hefted the suitcase, and began to drag it downstairs. Chapter 36. I lugged the suitcase down the stairs and left it by the front door. Then I hesitated, wondering whether to put my shoes on now or see what happened when I talked to Jake. I scratched my wrists and tried to collect myself. This was going to be incredibly tough, and I needed to be strong and calm. The baby kicked as I moved through the hallway into the kitchen, and I bit my lip to deal with the pain. Jake must have seen the strain on my face because he was next to me in an instant.
What's wrong? Is it the baby?
I shook my head, biting harder on my lip. I couldn't look at him, and I think he sensed that right away.
Emma, you're white as a sheet. Tell me now. Have the police made an arrest?
You'd like that, wouldn't you? I said.
Is it get you off the hook?
I clenched and unclenched my fists, still itching all over my body. I felt a flush of heat work its way up my neck. My entire body was hot and itchy, and I wanted nothing more than to scratch every inch of my skin until it all came off.
What the hell?
Jake took a step away from me and tried to get me to meet his gaze. I noticed that behind him on the kitchen counter was a new bottle of scotch.
Is that what you drink to numb the guilt?
What the hell are you talking about, Emma?
I lifted the prospectus from the kitchen table and slapped it down on the counter in front of his scotch. The glass rattled against the bottle as I flipped the page to the art history course. The spine was already bent in the appropriate place, meaning it took only a few moments to find the evidence of his lies.
I'm talking about this, Jake. You've been lying to me since we very first met. All these years. Where did you keep him? Where was he?
I flew at him, my claws out, my nails reaching for his neck. But Jake was quicker. He grasped me by the wrists and pushed me away. I backed away from him, wide-eyed and shaking. While Jake snatched up the brochure and read the page. When he realized what I was talking about, the blood drained from his face and his jaw slackened.
It's a typo, he said.
But he also reached for the bottle of scotch and began to unscrew the cap.
No, it isn't. I rang them, twice. The college has never heard of you. Unless David Brown is some alter ego you've dreamt up, you don't go to York every Tuesday and Thursday, you go somewhere else.
He poured a large measure of scotch into a tumbler and drank it quickly.
You don't understand.
Then enlighten me, because my son has been missing for 10 years, and I've defended you against people who suspected you. Now I find out you've been lying to me all these years, and... You think I took Aiden?
He shook his head and poured another large measure.
Fucking hell, Emma, of all the... You actually think I'm capable of that? You think I'm a paedophile, do you? You're my wife, Emma. You're supposed to know me.
I thought I did, but then I found out that you've been lying to me all these years.
What am I supposed to think?
Jake necked his drink and leaned over the kitchen counter, gripping the sideboard with his fingers. His knuckles turned white as I waited for him to answer me. I couldn't stand still, yet I barely moved. I found myself sort of rocking back and forth onto the balls of my feet, like a runner psyching themselves up for a sprint. Anything to rid myself of the energy coursing through me.
It's not what you think, he said.
Then what is it?
I love you. I really do.
He sucked in a deep breath, but still he didn't face me. Instead, he stared down at his hands gripping onto the kitchen counter like he was holding on to a cliff ledge.
But I have other... needs.
Part of me didn't want to ask, but of course I needed to know.
What kind of needs?
I scratched at the hot, itchy skin on my wrists and waited.
You're the only woman I've ever wanted to share my life with. To me, you are the woman. You are everything. You're so much kinder than anyone I've ever met. You're just beautiful.
I fell in love with you the moment I saw you, but there is something inside me that craves a different connection.
He licked his lips and hesitated.
It isn't your fault. I'm dirty. I have an affliction.
My knees felt like they were going to buckle. Jake tried to help me into a chair, but I swatted his hand away and leaned against the kitchen counter instead.
I think I'm addicted to sex.
He pulled his hair forward over his face and dragged his fingers over his eyes and down past his stubble to his neck.
I have to meet with women and have sex with them. I've always had to do it.
He began to cry.
I made up the excuse about the part-time job because I thought if I kept it to twice a week, I would be able to, I don't know, manage it, I guess. I couldn't stop myself before I met you. When I helped you recover from that dark time, you helped me recover too. You were everything to me.
He tried to reach out, but I backed away.
Don't touch me!
I snapped.
I'd never hurt Aiden.
His eyes were glistening from the tears and his skin shone under the kitchen lights.
I'm a fucking idiot. I know that, but I would never hurt him. How can I believe that?
He covered the ground between us in an instant.
By looking in my eyes and knowing it's true.
He grabbed me by the shoulders.
How have we got here, Emma? We love each other. You love me. How can you even think these things? Because people hide their faces. They hide them for years and years, even to the people who are closest to them. You've hidden this from me for years. How can I trust anything you say or do anymore?
I yanked myself free from the tight grip he had on my shoulders.
You're not the person I married, are you? You're someone else. And as far as I'm concerned, that someone else could be anyone.
He took a step back and fingered the empty glass of scotch on the kitchen table.
I have an alibi for the time Aiden was kidnapped. The other teachers saw me walking around the school.
I know, I said.
Simon from IT, apparently, who got a little confused a few weeks ago until you went into the station and sorted it out. What did you do? Pay him off. The guy is a slimy shit, Jake, so I'm not surprised.
He rolled his eyes.
You still don't believe me?
I turned away.
I don't know what to believe anymore.
Oh, come on, Emma.
Do you really believe Aiden would live in this house if I really was the kidnapper?
I faltered.
I don't know. He's not... I'm not sure he remembers.
All the shit I've had to put up with. Teenage sons coming back from the dead. Ex-boyfriends taking up all your time. And I know you go gallivanting around town while I'm at work. You couldn't give a shit about me. I mean, come on. I'm the first person you blame when things get tough, and even when I tell you the truth, you don't listen to me.
I am listening. I just don't know what to believe or who to trust. You must see why, Jake. My life has been turned upside down over the last few weeks. I've been driven almost to insanity by the things that have happened. It's just too much. I don't know where to turn.
That's why I'm here. Gently, he spun me around to face him. I'm here to help you get through all this, and I will be, I swear. I'm so sorry I've let you down. I never meant for any of this to happen.
Is it true?
I whispered.
Have you really been sleeping with other women? Why? I'm not enough for you.
His eyes welled with tears and his arms dropped down to his sides. He was hunched over like a broken toy.
You're everything for me. You really are. But it's an affliction. I should have got help for it. I think I'm addicted to casual sex. My heart fucking bleeds!
Fresh anger worked through me and I needed to do something to use up all the pent-up energy. I paced back and forth in front of the kitchen table, pulling on my hair until it hurt. Why did all this have to happen now?
I'm sorry, Emma.
He whined. He was full on crying now, with snot dripping from his nose.
I swear it, I'll never do it again. I'll go through therapy, I'll do whatever you want me to do. I want you to leave. No, forget it. I hate living in this house anyway. I'll go. I'll take Aiden and we'll go to Josie's for a few days. Then we can sort out what we're going to do going forwards. For fuck's sake! My due date is in a week. I'm having your child and you're fucking other women.
As heat spread through my veins, I found a coffee mug on the table, snatched it up and hurled it across the room. Jake ducked, and the mug hit the extractor fan above the stove, smashing into pieces.
Jesus! If that had hit me...
It didn't. Emma, I don't want you to leave. The smashing of the mug had sobered us. Jake's crying had stopped, and he spoke at a regular low level.
I love you so much. You mean the world to me. I would never hurt Aiden. I'd never hurt a child, Emma. You believe that, right?
I let out a long sigh and nodded. I believe that much, yes. Think, anyway. But I can't stay here, Jake. You've betrayed my trust. I can't have Aiden around someone I don't trust. Not right now.
But we're having a baby. The crib is all set up. Our little girl is coming into the world soon. You can't just up and leave a few days before your due date. What about the baby, Emma? Doesn't she deserve to come into this world with all the comfort she needs? I could have some stuff taken to Josie's, I said uncertainly. And what is Josie going to think of all that? The woman is infertile, and you're going to bring a newborn baby into her home just a few weeks after her husband left her. It's pretty low, Emma.
Fine, then I'll find my own place.
Don't leave, he pleaded. Don't break up this family. I know you love me. I can change. I will change for you. I can't trust you anymore.
I whimpered. I was tired. So tired. I sank down into one of the kitchen chairs.
I can't live without you.
Jake poured another glass of scotch and drank half in one go. His eyes and nose were wet from crying. His skin was pale and there were red rims around his eyes. He seemed older.
I just can't. You're everything to me, Emma.
I flinched.
Don't say that. Face it. Without each other, we both have nothing. Neither of us have any family. Not that count any.
I have Aiden.
I'm sorry, love, but he doesn't even speak to you.
Stop it, Jake!
You have to face the fact that he isn't the boy you thought died all those years ago. Aiden isn't that boy anymore, and I'm not sure you'll ever connect with him again.
My chin began to tremble.
Don't say that.
Emma, we need each other. We need to stay together for the baby.
I was so tired. I didn't want to fight anymore. I just wanted it all to stop.
Don't leave me, Emma. I'll go to counselling. I'll get help. This will all work out. You'll see. I promise.
Chapter 37. No one wants to believe they are weak, but we all have weakness inside us. We have strength too, but there are times when the circumstances in our lives are so overwhelming that we easily succumb to that weakness. Jake wore me down that day. I was so tired I couldn't fight anymore, and yes, I felt trapped. What he said about Josie did hit me hard. She was my best friend, and I hadn't thought about what it would do to her to have a newborn baby in her home. My parents were dead. I didn't have my own home. I was 1 week away from the due date for the birth of our child. I was emotionally drained, physically weak, and easily swayed by what seemed like the easier option at the time. I stayed in the house with the compromise that Jake slept on the sofa. The next morning I waited in the bedroom pretending to be asleep until he left for work. I wiped my eyes, took a shower, dried my hair and dressed. I plugged in my phone, which had died while Jake and I had been arguing until late into the night. Then I checked on Aiden. He was up, making himself some toast. Morning, I said, attempting to inject some brightness into my voice. I hope we didn't frighten you last night. Jake and I had some things to discuss, and it got a little heated.
I know you were working hard on your painting, so I don't know what you heard, but we should probably talk about it. Jake and I are having some problems. He's made some mistakes, and I said some horrible things, but we're both adults, and we're going to work through them. We might even have therapy like you do, Aiden. We want to move forward as a family. The more I spoke, the more I worried I was trying to convince myself rather than him. I shook cereal out of the packet and ignored my trembling hands. I swallowed two of my blood pressure pills with a glass of water and sat at the table with my silent son. If he was in the slightest way perturbed by what had been going on, he didn't show it. When breakfast was over, I went upstairs to make a start on putting the blankets inside the new crib. After Aiden's paint incident, we'd bought an entirely new crib. We could probably have washed most of it away, but there was something about seeing the red paint splattered across the baby's blanket like that. It made me want to buy a new one just to rid my mind of that image. So we did. And I decided to keep Aiden out of the baby's room. That was as far as I'd allowed myself to think that morning. Though my due date was looming, there was so much going on that I decided to block out my worries about Aiden around the baby. Did I trust my son? Did I believe that he was dangerous? Those were the kind of questions that played on my mind when I allowed myself to think for too long. If I admitted those things, then it led down a road I didn't want to tread. It meant giving Aiden up. I couldn't do that. I had to believe that everything would turn out okay somehow, but that belief waned by the day. After spreading out a soft baby blanket, I went back to the bedroom to straighten up the bed and sort out some washing for the machine. While I was there, I checked on my mobile phone charging up next to the bed. I had 5 missed calls and 2 voicemail messages. The first was from DCI Stevenson, asking whether Aiden had made any progress. He usually made that call once every couple of days to check in. Or, when the family liaison officers were with us all day, every day he'd check in with them. I felt bad for DCI Stevenson. He was a good man trying to do his job under extraordinary pressure. But the fact was that after 2.5 weeks of investigation, he had come up with nothing. The second voicemail was from Rob. I sat upright when I listened to the message. Then I quickly unplugged my phone from the charger and made my way downstairs. The message said, "Emma, it's Rob. Dad's just been released. They didn't find any evidence. They searched the house and there was nothing. He didn't do it. I know that. And you do too, probably. That's not the main reason I'm calling you. Look, I didn't want to say this over voicemail, but you're not answering and you need to know. I don't trust Jake, you know that. Well, I've been following him for a while. Keeps going to some garage outside Bishoptown near the A59. There's something dodgy about it all. I'm not saying that he's hurt Aiden. I'm not saying that. Yet. But I think we should go and see this garage and figure out what's going on. No police. Just you and me. Drop Aiden off at my parents' place and come meet me." It was Peter who answered the door, though I'd been hoping it wouldn't be. I offered him a thin smile. "I'm so sorry you were questioned by the police like that." "It's all right," he said, ushering me in. "They've questioned everyone else. I'm just sorry I never saw Aiden. I had no idea I was so close to where he was taken. If only I'd seen something. Anyway, they've cleared me from the investigation now. Apparently the CCTV footage went on to show me taking pictures at the time they suspect Aiden was taken. Why they couldn't check all that before holding me for hours, I don't know. It's that Duke they should be questioning. I don't like the look of that fella." "Me neither," I said. "Is Rob around? He thought it might be a good idea for you guys to watch Aiden while we check something out."
"Yes, and he was just as vague. I hope you're not getting yourselves into any trouble."
Peter walked beside me as we made our way through the front of the B&B to the living quarters behind the main reception. "No, nothing like that." I hesitated outside the door into their personal rooms. "Listen, Peter, this is hard to say, but I need to say it. Can you make sure that Sonia doesn't do anything without getting my okay? She had another child to visit Aiden last time, and it didn't go so well. He isn't up to playing with other children just yet.
It's all a delicate balance, and I need to be sure that Sonia isn't going to upset the apple cart. I let out a sigh of relief.
Exactly.
I'll keep her reined in. Don't worry, he said.
Thanks. I appreciate it.
I paused. For a moment, I was going to tell him that I never suspected he could have hurt Aiden. But that would have been a lie. There had been a moment where I'd sat down and thought about whether Peter could be capable of kidnapping, imprisoning, raping, and torturing my own son. The truth is, I had thought that it might be possible. Just as I had thought about virtually everyone in my life being capable of such an act. As we walked into the back rooms of the B&B, I felt sick to my stomach with the realization that I presumed everyone guilty. Whoever did take Aiden had won. He'd broken Aiden to the point where he was an empty shell, and he turned me into a suspicious, anxious woman. I attempted to rearrange my face to hide these thoughts from the others, but Rob was the first to frown at my fixed grin. Nevertheless, we settled Aiden and left the B&B. I was on edge, scratching my hands and my temples. I didn't want to leave Aiden with them, but I knew we couldn't take him with us. We made our way back out of the B&B and headed to Rob's truck.
Are you all right?
He asked as I climbed into the passenger seat.
I've been better.
What's happened? I pulled the seatbelt across my body and clipped it in place.
There's something you need to know.
Whatever Jake has at his garage, it might not be what you think. I found out yesterday that he's been lying to me. He's been meeting women and having sex with them.
What?
I know. I'm in shock, too. Look, can we just get on with this? Why aren't we going to the police anyway?
Because they already think I'm an idiot. I'm aware that this whole thing might be nothing, and that's why I wanted to bring you along. I'm not wasting their time if he has some secret motorbike in there or whatever. And I want you to see it too, so I have someone to back me up. Besides, they need to get a warrant or whatever, and God knows how long that'll take.
It's probably some awful sex room.
I shuddered.
Full of porn and sex toys. He says he's a sex addict.
Fucking hell.
Don't say anything. Just drive. I can't. I don't want to think about it. And I need to know what's in that garage.
Rob started the engine and the radio came on, blaring out Katy Perry. He apologized and turned the volume down as he pulled out of the B&B car park. He had the radio tuned into a local station as we made our way out of the village and out towards the A59. Neither of us spoke, and we barely heard the radio. But there was some sort of talk about a storm hitting the Bishoptown area. The baby was unsettled that day. I rubbed my pregnant belly and tried to calm myself down. Stressed mothers produce stressed babies, or so they say. I needed to think about my own well-being more than I had been. That wasn't an easy task, given what was going on around me. Rob's old truck thrummed with the sound of rain as it began to spill down from the dark clouds above. There wasn't a single part of sky that wasn't grey or dark. There was no blue whatsoever, no sun, no light. I pulled the collar of my coat higher and tried not to think about the threatening sky. We pulled into the storage center in grim silence. Before clambering out of the truck, I pulled the hood from my coat down low over my face. Rob used a baseball cap to protect himself from the rain. We hurried along a long line of garage doors until Rob stopped.
It's this one, number 29.
How are we going to get in? I asked.
We can't break in.
I have a mate who works here. Remember Fletcher?
I groaned.
You mean your weed dealer?
The very same. Anyway, he owed me. So he's left the door open for me. Look, if anyone finds out, we say that we heard something inside and the thing was open anyway, so...
Just get it open, Rob. Careful of fingerprints, though.
Rob pulled on a pair of leather gloves. Way ahead of you. The garage door opened with a rumbling rattle that sounded uncannily like thunder. The pouring rain was cold, chilling on my skin so that I was almost glad to duck under the doors and into the garage.
What the hell?
Rob said. I pulled my hood away to glimpse the filled garage. What I saw took my breath away. It wasn't anything at all like I had expected, and I admit, I had already considered the worst. I had thought of a terrible soundproof dungeon for nefarious activities. I thought of a place dedicated to a sex addict, covered in pornography with a dirty mattress pushed against a wall. I'd thought of it all. And yet I was still surprised. There was one element that I had guessed correctly. The garage was filled with pictures, but they were not pornographic. At least not all of them. Most of the pictures were paintings. There were dozens hanging from the walls, and in between the portraits were small photographs, all with the same subject. Me. In the middle of the garage was an easel and a desk stacked with paints. There was also a tall filing cabinet shoved against the wall. I walked across the garage and stood close to the wall, taking in all the photographs of my face. There were pictures of me walking through Bishoptown, sitting on a park bench feeding the ducks, carrying shopping bags home, getting off the bus. None of them appeared in chronological order. They were all jumbled up along the walls. In some, I had Aidan's small hand in mine. Here we were throwing pebbles over the bridge into the ooze. There we were sitting in the park eating sandwiches. Me stood at the bottom of a tree gazing into the branches at my monkey-like child. Me wandering through the streets of Bishoptown with my makeup spread halfway down my face, bags filled with bottles of Pinot Grigio. And then, the most disturbing of all, me getting on the school bus. Me dressed for the school prom with Rob on my arm, though Rob's face had been scratched out. Look, Rob pointed to a large portrait in the center of the back wall. You're wearing the school tie. That was before sixth form. We didn't have a uniform in sixth form. And then it hit me. Partway through our argument the night before, Jake had admitted that he had fallen in love with me the first time he had seen me. I was in school the first time he'd seen me. He was a teacher. Oh, Jesus. Emma, I'm so sorry. I didn't expect any of this. What did you expect? I whispered. Rob didn't answer, and I was too distracted by the pictures to listen anyway. It was the paintings that disturbed me the most. He'd mostly painted my face. They were intricate portraits, almost photorealist in style, with my features captured perfectly. In one of the paintings, I was clearly sleeping with my hair flowing out behind me. On its own, I would have considered it a beautiful and flattering surprise, but as it was part of this disgusting invasion of my privacy, it was creepy and made my skin crawl. "Don't scratch your hands," Rob said. He reached into his pocket and pulled out a pair of thin plastic gloves, the same sort that surgeons wear. "Put these on. Can't leave any DNA. This is a crime scene." I was about to ask why, but of course, I was the crime. He stalked me. He took pictures of me when I was a minor. Some of them were definitely provocative. I might not be naked, but I was bending over wearing a short skirt, or spilling out of my school shirt. I wanted to run away from that garage and immerse myself in scalding water to get the stink off me. I'd been violated. "Let's see what's in the filing cabinet," Rob said. He was gentle now. It wasn't like Rob to keep from erupting in a stressful situation, so I knew it was for my benefit. He knew that things were more complicated than Jake being a bad guy. I was carrying his baby. We were linked, however disgusting that felt. "I don't understand any of this," I said in a quiet voice. "If he was so obsessed with me, why was he sleeping around with all those women?" "I'm not sure he was, Em," Rob said. "I think he came here instead." "But why? He had me. I was married to him." Rob didn't answer, so I began to look through the stacks of paintings piled along the floor while Rob opened the filing cabinet. I gasped. These paintings were even worse than the ones on the wall. Jake had painted me in sadistic ways. In most of them I was naked or scantily clad, with my hands tied up and a ball gag in my mouth. There wasn't any hint of desire in my eyes. He'd painted me afraid. His fantasies saw me as a reluctant slave, an unwilling participant in his games. This was all about dominating me. But he hadn't been like that in our relationship at all. He was controlling, yes. I can look back on that and recognize it for what it was. He found me the job at the same school where he worked. He owned the house and the car. He was finicky about what was in our home. But he was never sadistic. He never hit me or even tried anything daring in the bedroom. Why did he need these bizarre pictures? I was beginning to understand Jake's true addiction. It wasn't sex, it was fantasy. It was ownership. What was better than putting a child inside me? I thought back to the day I'd found out I was pregnant. I blamed it on a cold, making my birth control pill less effective. But what if... what if Jake had tampered with it? A cold stone of dread sank to the pit of my stomach. Emma, come and look at these. I left the paintings the same way I'd found them and walked over to the other side of the garage to see what Rob was looking at. He'd found a large binder inside the filing cabinet. He lowered it so I could see what was inside. First, I didn't want to look, but then I forced myself to. "It's another girl," said Rob. "Remember when the press got hold of that photo of Jake with a student? That's a student. There are a ton of pictures of her in here." He flipped the page and I gasped. The girl, pretty and dark-haired, was naked on the next page.
Fuck! He lied. He did have a relationship with her.
The pages flipped, showing more and more photographs of this young girl in shockingly vulnerable poses. I knew then that her slightly bemused expression would haunt me forever. The poses were brash and confident, but her expression was one of complete insecurity. He took advantage of her. Fucking arsehole. Look, he has two or more copies of some of these. He kept them as leverage, I bet. To make sure she didn't tell anyone. I bet the bastard threatened to show people.
Rob slammed the file shut and a USB stick fell onto the floor.
I picked it up. I don't even want to know what's on it.
Rob shook his head, then dug out a bunch of letters held together with a rubber band. He pulled the top one out and began reading.
"I miss you so much. Please call me back, Jake. I want to see you. I'm so frightened that people will find out what happened and we'll get into trouble."
Shit. It's from the girl.
And this is postmarked a week ago. He's still in touch with her. I bet he keeps her as his little pet, hanging on to every word he says. I wanted to collapse onto the ground. I wanted to stop and let the weight of the world push me down until I was nothing. But I didn't do any of that. I searched through the filing cabinet with Rob, looking for more incriminating evidence against the man I had sworn to love in sickness and in health until death do us part. Did this count as sickness? Was I supposed to remain in love with this man forever? I straightened myself up and took a deep breath. No. I wouldn't collapse, and I wouldn't throw up. I would keep my head, and I would find out exactly what was going on.
Emma.
There was a warning in Rob's voice that tickled my stomach and made the hairs on the back of my neck stand on end.
There are newspaper clippings in here. About your parents.
What?
I took the scrapbook that Rob was holding and read through the pages. Every article about my parents' death was documented within the book. He had meticulously cut out each page and glued it into the book, taking care not to fold over or crumple the corners.
Why would he have this?
Emma, he is obsessed with you. Don't you think he would have wanted your parents out of the way? Aiden was gone, I was gone. That just left two people in your life.
My eyes burned with withheld tears. My arms lost all strength and I almost dropped the scrapbook. It was Rob who caught it before it fell.
You think he killed them?
I whispered. Of all the horrible things that had happened to me, this was the most unexpected moment since I'd walked through the hospital doors and seen my son alive. This I had not anticipated at all.
I do, Rob said. I'm sorry. And there's more. Clippings of articles from when we thought Aiden had drowned. I close my eyes and try to steady my breathing.
Do you think he took Aiden?
Rob frowned. He's obsessed with you. I don't know whether it fits the pattern, but I think he's capable of anything. I'm sorry, Em.
But I saw Amy on that TV show and I was sure it was her. She's evil, she's...
I trailed off thinking about the masks people wear. I'd seen Amy for who she was during that interview, and now I had seen Jake for who he was too. He was clearly unhinged, and that meant I had to assume he was capable of anything. I thought back to the moment I was told about my parents' accident. Mum and Dad had been on their way to London for a weekend away when their brakes failed on the motorway. The police told me it was because of water in the brake fluid. An easy problem to miss when you're not good with cars. It was all so feasible. But what if it was Jake tampering with the engine? I thought back to that time. Who had I told they were going away? Who knew? Most of the village, probably. My mum was the GP and she treated most of the town. I would have mentioned it to anyone while doing my chores, shopping in the newsagents or sending a parcel in the post office. It would only have taken Jake to overhear or have a conversation with Mum herself. Or maybe someone mentioned it at school. Gossip was rife amongst the Bishoptown residents, and not a lot happens. So a short trip to London might make itself into the daily chatter. Did you know Dina Price is going to London for the weekend? Well, she must still be trying to get over the death of her grandson. I wonder if he'll see a show. Yes, he could easily have heard about my parents' trip down to London.
Rob, I can't bear this,
I whispered.
I'm trying to be strong. The air in here.
Take a step outside, he said. He wrapped his arm around my waist. Just for a moment, breathe. Chapter 38. The rain was soothing and I didn't care about the cold. I was freezing to the bones of me anyway, and it had nothing to do with the October weather. I leaned against the slick exterior of the garage and let the rain wash over me. The place smelled like wet cement and mould. That would be the smell I would most associate with Jake as time wore on. Wet cement and mould. That was him, slippery and foul, a man with two sides. How had I fallen for him? He had manufactured it, all of it. He'd seen the way I'd fallen apart after Aiden, and he'd seized the opportunity while he had the chance. With my parents out of the picture, he knew I had no one to take care of me, and he knew I would fail to take care of myself. So there he was, swooping in like a knight in shining armour, becoming my protector and my healer. He would introduce me to paints again. He helped me find a job. He set me back on my feet, always with an arm behind my back, propping me up. Rob emerged from the garage with his head held low. When he came closer, he pulled me into a hug. I never should have left. I'm so sorry, Emma. I shouldn't have left you grieving for Aiden by yourself. I was fucking selfish, and I'm sorry. Though I hugged him back, I felt like a shell. Now I understood how Aiden could sleepwalk through his life without uttering a single syllable. I got it. My heart shriveled up inside my ribcage, barely fluttering. I was hollowed out. He shut the garage door and led us to the truck. Once inside, he removed his cap and rubbed the rainwater from his skin. Aside from the pictures of you as a minor and the girl, there's nothing. At least there's nothing that might prove whether he killed your parents, he said. He didn't keep any souvenirs if he did do it, just those clippings. And I guess you could say it was his obsession with you that made him keep them. I think he did it, though. It makes sense. It fits in with all these lies.
Does it?
I spluttered. My throat was so choked that I could hardly get my words out.
Are we jumping to conclusions here? He's my husband, and I'm accusing him of murder.
Emma, I really think he did it. And I think you believe it too. The sick part was that I did believe it. I wanted to be wrong, but I believed it. It's not your fault, Em. He took advantage of you like he did that girl. That's what he does.
I know. Just...
I stared down at my stomach. Was I carrying the child of a murderer?
How could I have fallen in love with him?
Did you, though? Wasn't it just the security he offered that you fell in love with? If you were really in love with him, would there have been this spark between us? I waved a dismissive hand.
That's because of Aiden coming back. Our emotions were all over the place.
I tried to ignore the hurt look in his eyes.
Why didn't the police find any foul play when they investigated Mum and Dad's deaths?
Probably because they weren't expecting any. Your parents didn't have any enemies. No one would expect them to be murdered.
We should call the police,
I said. He nodded. And we need to figure out what to do next. It's lunchtime now. He'll still be at the school, right?
Yeah.
We'll go to your place and get some stuff. You can stay with us in the B&B. I shook my head. As much as I hated to do this to my best friend, it was now necessary.
I want to go to Josie's. Your mum is too much of a wild card, Rob. She makes decisions without consulting me, and she's too stubborn. She thinks she knows what's best for Aiden all the time, and I don't want to be fighting with her. Besides, I'm due to give birth in days, and your parents haven't got the room.
The thought of my impending arrival weighed so heavy on my shoulders that I let them sag. I rested my head against the window of Rob's truck.
What am I going to do?
His warm fingers caressed my hand before squeezing it tight. The way my hand fit right into his injected a little warmth into my bones. It wasn't much, but it was something. I'm not going anywhere this time, Emma. I'm going to help you. Yes, but for how long, I thought.
You've said that before.
Rob sighed. I mean it this time.
How do I know you're not lying to me again? You lied last time, didn't you? You told me in the weeks after the flood that you would never leave my side. That no matter what, we would be together. You lied.
It's not a lie if you believe it to be true. I thought we would be. I wiped a tear from my eye.
Sorry, I'm just upset. We should go.
Rob started the engine and we finally left the storage yard. When we arrived at Jake's house, not my home, not anymore, Rob phoned the police and left an anonymous tip that Jake Price had stashed drugs in a storage garage outside Bishoptown. I forced myself into the shower and let the hot water wash away the smell of mould from the wet garage walls. Then I dressed, collected my suitcase, and repacked some of the things I'd packed from the night before, along with more of Aiden's clothes. Rob loaded his truck with as much baby paraphernalia as he could, while I tried to get in touch with Josie. Still no answer. Rob wiped rain and sweat away from his forehead with the back of his hand and straightened up. His face was red from the effort of carrying heavy suitcases into the truck. I shook my head. I thought she'd still be off work. She's taken some time off to deal with Hugh's disappearance. Do you want to stay with Mum and Dad? I chewed on my bottom lip. No, I have a key for Josie's. We'll go pick up Aiden and then I'll call Josie when I get there. I've left a voicemail for now. Are you sure she's going to be okay with this? A sudden cramp rippled through my abdomen and I creased over. Emma? I straightened up as the pain dissipated.
I'm okay. Josie will be fine. I'd do the same for her, given the circumstances. She won't have a problem with it.
Rob nodded to indicate it was good enough for him, but he frowned at the same time. Are you sure you're all right?
Just the baby kicking.
But I was quivering down to my toes. The pain felt a lot worse than the baby kicking, and I had no idea whether Josie would take me in. All I knew was that I didn't want to be around Rob's parents. Not after the trick his mum pulled that upset Aiden, and not after his dad had been questioned by the police. No, I needed to be somewhere that would be safe for Aiden. Though things were a mess with Hugh gone, I knew that Josie was the best option. It sounded as though Hugh wasn't coming back, or at least not for the foreseeable future, so I got to live with Josie alone for a week or two until I'd had the baby and could look for a flat in the village. I couldn't believe I was even at this junction in my life, but that's what happens when all the control is taken from you. The worst part was how I'd let Jake take even more control from me. I'd let him persuade me to sell my parents' house. I'd put my money into a joint account. I'd taken a job where I worked with him. I'd done all those stupid things because I loved and trusted him. Though I regretted it as I climbed back into Rob's truck and watched the rain blur Bishoptown into an abstract painting, there came a time when I stopped regretting my decisions. No one should regret loving and trusting another human being. Yes, sometimes we direct our love and trust to the wrong person. But that doesn't mean we shouldn't have done it at all. Hearts should be protected, but they shouldn't be forced to close. The withered piece of coal hidden deep in my chest had once been full of love. But as we picked up Aiden and drove on to Josie's house, it was full of nothing but hate. Chapter 39. It was late afternoon by the time we reached Josie's house, and dark clouds had descended, preventing sunlight from penetrating the murky sky. I opened the door to the truck and climbed out, holding my protruding pregnant belly. The rain fell over us in one great torrent, and instantly I was transported back to that fateful day 10 years ago when I lost my son. But this time, he was by my side. I held onto his arm with one hand and readjusted the hood on his raincoat with the other. Beneath the hood he was there, quiet as a church mouse, pale as a raw potato, and lifeless as a mannequin. My son, the boy whose only reaction since coming back to me had been destructive and violent. I wrapped a protective arm around his shoulder and walked him up to the house.
"Do you think the police have been to the garage yet?"
I asked, raising my voice above the wind.
"Stevenson's not called."
"He'll ring you when they've put two and two together. At least you're safe here, away from him. They'll have arrested him by the end of the day." I bent down to retrieve the spare key from the bottom of a pile of decorative rocks placed around a potted plant. The thing about Bishoptown is that nothing really happens. No one gets burgled, so no one thinks to keep their house safe. I dug the key out from the bottom of the fake rock. "They'll have him for the relationship with that girl in Bournemouth. I put it all front and centre so they'd find it right away," Rob said. He carried the heaviest of my suitcases. "Then we need to figure out if Jake really took Aiden, and why." Rob glanced back at Aiden and lowered his voice. "Aiden hasn't told us it was Jake." His words made me feel exhausted. There was too much to consider, too many thoughts swirling around my mind in a whirlpool of words like kidnap and murder. I shut my eyes and forced the thoughts away. "Are you all right?" Rob asked. "Do you want me to open the door?" I nodded and handed him the key, stroking my stomach with one hand. Though the rain was soaking us through and the wind was howling above the forest that sat in the valley beneath us, I still didn't rush to get into the house. The place reminded me of a happier time. Seeing just this door brought back memories of Hugh and Josie's parties when Aiden was little. The five of us, me, Rob, Aiden, Josie and Hugh, would light the fire in the living room and watch films before putting Aiden to bed and breaking out the wine and cheese. This was supposed to be a house filled with laughter, not a refuge for two wronged women. Hugh, the surprise philanderer, disappearing with another woman, and Jake, the surprise stalker, spending hours locked away in his garage painting bizarre portraits of me. Another cramp tore through my lower body and I leaned into it, biting my lip against the pain. Rob placed a hand on my back. "Are you in labor?" I shook my head. "I don't think so. I had these pains with Aiden. They were Braxton Hicks." "Let's get you inside and sat down. You need to get your feet up and relax." He gave me a smile that was half pitying and stiff with concern.
"Relax?"
I laughed. Rob shook his head with a hollow chuckle. He pushed the key into the door and twisted it. The suitcase was cumbersome, so he had to shove it forward with his knees as he opened the door. He bent down to lift it up as the door swung open. First, I was looking down at Rob, but when I lifted my eyes, I screamed. A large, heavy object swung down, hitting Rob's skull with a crack, and above that heavy object stood a man with a toothy grin. His cheek stretched wide from the manic smile, and blood splattered across his face. "Hello, darling," he said. I spun round and pushed Aiden forwards. "Get in the car!" But Jake reached out and grasped my hair from behind, yanking me back with such force that I lost my balance and fell onto him. His fingernail scratched my scalp and his fist pulled painfully on my hair as I tripped over Rob's lifeless body. But I didn't care about the searing pain. All I cared about was Aiden standing in the driveway, still as a statue. "Get in the car and lock the doors!" I screamed. Rob had the car keys in his pocket, which I tried to convey with my eyes, but Aiden could only stare at me. "He's not going anywhere, are you, Aiden?" Jake said. His voice was so calm and collected that a shiver ran down my spine. I pulled away from Jake, desperately trying to release myself from his grip, but my feet couldn't find purchase on Josie's tiled floor. I kept slipping on something wet. When I looked down, I saw that I was slipping on Rob's blood. His red blood seeped into the material of my shoes, and for a brief instant they appeared as mundane as feet covered in red paint. I suppressed a retch, trying to stay focused on everything going on. "Let him go, Jake. It's me you want." Jake's free hand wrapped around my neck. "That's what you'd like to think, isn't it?" His hot breath tickled my ears. I smelled the sourness of stale scotch on his breath. "Come on, Aiden. You, me, and your mum have a lot to talk about."
"Please," I begged. "Please, Aiden, run away. Get help."
I cried out as my hair was yanked back even harder, and Jake started to drag me back away from Rob and away from my son. I tried to scream as loud as I could, but the hand around my throat worked its way up and clamped over my mouth. I struggled as Jake pulled me further into the house, and all the time, Aiden stood there watching it happen. Time seemed to stand still. I was kicking and screaming in Jake's grasp, while Aiden stood in the doorway with his eyes wide and his face slack. Was he afraid? Did he care? I didn't know. I couldn't tell. I started to cry. Aiden stepped into the house. He had to lift his knees to step over his father's lifeless body.
"Good boy, Aiden," Jake said. "Now pull the arsehole further into the house, will you?"
Aiden bent down and dragged Rob further into the house. I felt sick. I'd stopped struggling. I was just watching as my son obeyed the monster I'd married.
"Take the phone out of his pocket, and then lock the door and bring me the key."
Aiden did everything Jake said as if in a stupor. I could only watch as my son handed the key over to Jake, who had let go of my mouth to take the key and put it in his pocket.
"What are you doing, Aiden?"
I cried.
"Why did you do that?"
But he didn't answer. Chapter 40.
"What have you done with Josie?"
Jake finally allowed me to stand, but he pushed me through the hallway by the crook of my elbow. I didn't struggle because I knew he was stronger and that if I tried anything, he'd have the upper hand. My mind was sharper than it had ever been, brought into focus from the adrenaline and anger coursing through me. If I was going to do anything about Jake's attack, I would need to wait for the perfect moment, as hard as that would be while Rob was injured or worse on the ground and Josie was nowhere to be seen.
"She's a little tied up at the moment."
The corner of his mouth lifted in amusement.
"What are you going to do with me?"
I asked. Jake pushed me into the living room and gestured towards the sofa.
"We're going to talk. Aiden, why don't you sit down next to your mother? And why don't you make yourselves comfortable? Take off those coats, and while you're at it, Emma, hand me your phone."
I reluctantly did what he wanted. Jake threw my phone and Rob's onto the Barrett's carpet and stamped hard on the screens. Then he kicked them away into the corner of the room. It sickened me to see the way Aiden obeyed him. Since my son had come back from the dead, he'd had this strange way of doing whatever Jake asked of him.
I'd never really understood it, but I put it down as some strange residual after-effect of spending 10 years of confinement at the hands of another man. But now, he had the choice to leave and he didn't.
You took...